Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by Los Bagels, bringing the community organic fresh baked bagels, specialty breads and baked goods, and my personal favorite, their famous slug. Los Bagels, they're here, baking through it, 7 days a week at 1061 I Street in Arcata or 403 2nd Street in Old Town Eureka, or visit losbagels.com.
It's Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost Good Enough podcast slash the way we are able to hang out with people, the good people of Humboldt, without breathing their air. My name is Andrew Goff.
I'm Stephanie McGarry. I think that that's just what a beautiful way to describe this podcast. Just people talking without breathing each other's air. We have so many dang episodes of this thing at this point. If you're interested in getting those all in your little podcast app on your phone, you can now subscribe to Humboldt Holding Up on iTunes.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing, Andrew?
It's
not that amazing. but also, I just want to mention that, you know, we're always looking for advertisers. So, hey, you got something? You want to advertise it? Why not advertise it on Humboldt's blossoming podcast?
It's spring's coming.
Yes, exactly. And
not only the daffodils that are coming up, it's Humboldt Holding Up. Today on the show, we have Anne Holcomb, who is the executive director of Food for People. I would argue one of the most vital nonprofits we have here in Humboldt, out there making sure that people have enough to eat. And in these uncertain, crazy, wacky, no good times, their presence is even more felt and appreciated. They've had a crazy year from their, obviously, all the COVID stuff, and then also the building that that houses their main pantry here in Eureka having a sewage mishap that led to it being mostly torn down. And Anne is one of the good people that makes Humboldt work. So we're excited to talk to her. So let's get her here in the Zoom room. Anne.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So you're ready to do this? You feel relaxed? And is this your first podcast?
Not exactly, but
no? Okay.
Yeah, I'm ready. Oh, what? Really?
Okay. Well,
I wouldn't say I'm an old hand at it, but
okay. So Anne, thank you for agreeing to do this and helping people hopefully understand the role that Food for People fills here in Humboldt. I think most people would agree that y'all are one of the more vital nonprofits we have, and we're just so appreciative of the effort you put into making sure Humboldt is fed. But I was actually hoping we could start out by finding out a little bit more about you. You know, I've run into you at Food for People events and fundraisers over the years, but I don't know that I know that much about the Anne Holcomb Humboldt story. So just, you know, like where did you come from and how did you find your way to this work?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm originally from Maine, actually, and I have family roots that go back into the late 1600s there. So okay. When I go back home, I can visit graveyards and see names of former relatives and all that sort of thing. And okay. I've been in Humboldt for just a little over 20 years now as of December. So my son came out to go to HSU more than 20 years ago and decided that he really loved it out here and made it pretty clear he was never coming back to Maine winters. And then my daughter followed a few years later. And then once they both started families and made it clear they were settling down, I thought, okay, well, if I want to see my grandkids grow up, maybe I should think about moving out here. And I had visited a number of times and really loved the area. But I will admit that moving in your 50s to an entirely new area and, you know, moving away from all your friends and support systems was a bit daunting.
Yeah.
I have really appreciated the opportunity to be part of this community And, you know, back in Maine, the work that I did was a bit different, but somewhat related. It was mostly focused on working with people with disabilities. And, you know, I got into that around the time of the deinstitutionalization movement. And in Maine, fortunately, it was handled, I think, a lot better than it was here in California. Yeah. At the time, Angus King, who's now the senator, was governor, and as an independent, as he remains today. And it was a much more thoughtful approach of making sure that there were great support systems in place as people were moved out of the institutions. So it was actually pretty exciting to be part of that and to help people move out of that institutional environment and into the community and really blossom and have an opportunity to have a more normal life as community members.
So 20 years ago, you landed Humboldt. And then how do you find your way to Food for People?
You know, I started looking for work. I had decided I wasn't going to do that before coming out. I wanted to get a little better sense of the community. And I did look into, you know, what was available, working with disability rights and so forth. And, you know, previously I'd been the executive director of a nonprofit that provided support for parents of children with special needs and assistance with the special education process. And I was honestly kind of ready for a bit of a break for that. So I, you know, I explored it, and then I applied for a job with the county in health education, and with another local organization, North Coast Children's Services. And then I applied for the job at Food for People. And I was fortunate to have my choice of the three positions I was offered. I had honestly never set foot in a food bank before. You know, I had helped in my community with different, you know, holiday things with food boxes, and organized a little local co-op purchasing group, and had a lot of interest in food. And I actually introduced, you know, good eating concepts into the group homes that I worked in. And I just thought, you know, this was kind of an exciting opportunity, and talked to some of my mentors back east, and they said, yeah, you know, this sounds great, go for it.
Wow. So
it was an interesting process, because their interview process at that time was to have the entire staff and board interview you.
Okay. No surprises. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. They were sort of at that point of having, you know, a couple of years prior done a successful capital campaign that got them into the building at 14th Street. And it was an exciting move for them, because they'd been in a little 1,000-square-foot residence on B Street that was, I think, raised probably within 2 months of the time they moved out there. And I going through the archives, I looked at some pictures, and it really was a little tiny house with containers in the back and refrigeration units and boxes stacked everywhere and hallways and people doing intake around a little kitchen table. Wow. So moving into the 9,000 square foot warehouse on 14th was a pretty big shift for everyone. But, you know, I probably should have looked a little more closely at the budget, because it was also about the time that the grant funds that had gotten them into the building and started new programs were starting to wind down.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, that's what every nonprofit goes through. So, It was really a process of getting to know the community and what the grant opportunities were and what kind of community support we would have. And I really feel proud of what we've been able to accomplish over the years, and, you know, engage the community and get the message out there that I think that, you know, the perception that I felt coming in as an outsider was that anyone who accessed the food bank was homeless and, you know, unwilling to work and kind of lazy and so forth. And I could see from meeting the people coming in on a regular basis and the people I talked to that that wasn't the case.
You know, getting back to what you're saying about the work that Food for People does, I mean, we are both pretty familiar with it, but maybe for, you know, some of the people who might be listening who aren't super familiar with it, I'm sure that you have to explain this all the time, but we're hoping maybe you could just sort of, you know, give the pitch for what Food for People is and what you do exactly, and maybe give us a little bit of the organization's history.
Yeah, it's funny, because, you know, as we've prepared for a new building, I've gone back through the archives and looked at pictures that I hadn't really taken the time to look at before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Food for People was started back in the 70s as kind of a grassroots movement. And its first iteration was as the Food Rights Action Project. And I actually found a picture of a kind of battered old van with that printed on the side with the same phone number we still have, you know, four decades later.
Wow.
It was kind of fun. And it was in the late 70s that they formalized and became a nonprofit and set up the arrangements with USDA to become a distribution point for the commodities program and so forth. And they kind of added some layers from there. A lot of it was still very grassroots oriented with a lot of volunteers and kind of a core staff. And it was great. They really accomplished a lot. And, you know, our role is really to provide food assistance for people who are struggling financially. And for some people, that's an ongoing issue. We serve about a quarter of the people we serve are seniors who are living on fixed limited incomes. And, you know, any unexpected bill can kind of put you over the edge. So it's great that we can provide supplemental food for folks so that they can be sure they can maintain their health when times are tough. And we have people who come in episodically. It's just when, you know, something happens in their lives that creates a financial hardship. And, you know, for so many people, I think what we've seen during the pandemic is that, you know, what they've been saying for years about the fact that so few Americans could survive a disaster that required $1,000 or more to address is really, really true. And things like an unexpected car repair, a medical bill, being out of work for a period of time, if your hours are cut, you know, so many things like that can just be such a stressor financially. So there are people who come in occasionally when they need some additional assistance, and those who come in more regularly because they are just on the edge financially.
And just to be clear, like, you know, anybody can come to Food for People. Yeah. Like there's no like means testing. It's just, you come in and you say, I need some food, and y'all are there to feed people like that.
Yeah, USDA has made that pretty easy, thankfully. It's a self-certification process where you show them the income guidelines, and you just have to say, yes, I meet those qualifications. And we don't have to ask for ID. We don't have any proof of income requirements. It's really, you know, if you come in and tell us that you need food, then you're going to get some food. We have just one program that's means tested, and it's a program for seniors called the Commodity Supplemental Food Program.
You know, okay. Catchy name, Anne.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's the only one, and we do have to see proof of income and age for that one.
Okay.
But it's really not a very onerous process, so.
Yeah. And does most of your food, I mean, I know that sometimes you take smaller food donations like from individuals, but other times you're not. Like, where does most of the food come from? Do you have purchase it yourself with like the, yeah, or do big grocery stores donate it? Like, I'm just curious about that.
Well, it's kind of a mix of all of the above. Anywhere from 25% to 30% typically comes through the USDA commodities program. Okay. A lot of it is donated. A lot more is purchased these days. Thankfully, our contract with Humboldt County DHHS to do CalFresh outreach, they've made it possible for us to also purchase food to help meet immediate needs, because it can take some time to qualify for services. And honestly, it's been a great way to build trust with people and get them in the door and ask those questions. I think the partnership is a really good one, because there's no way that we could food bank our way out of hunger and food insecurity. It takes having a really robust safety net that is available. And I do feel that the government has a role to play in that. So, you know, things, it's called SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, nationally, and CalFresh here in California is a great tool for that, and reduces some of the reliance on charity as a as your main point of food access. Right. So, you know, it's great to have that mix.
And as far as like, you know, the scale of what Food for People, you know, doles out, do you have like any metrics to try and help people understand like how, you know, how vital Food for People is to Humboldt?
Well, you know, I can say we're distributing more than 2 million pounds of food a year. And
that's a metric.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is a metric. And, you know, we have always tried to keep the focus on keeping it healthy, because it's not enough just to fill people's bellies. It's important to make sure that we're giving them healthy food, because, you know, we see it as an investment in the overall health of our community. So yeah. I'm really proud to report that over the last several years, like 36 to 39% of the 2 million pounds we've passed out has been fresh fruits and vegetables.
That's great. Mm. Yeah. Because like you said, that's so important too, because a lot of the time, you know, some of the lower income people that are utilizing programs like this, you know, don't have a lot of access to fresh food when they use things like this. And so, you know, and all the cheaper and free food that they're getting might not always be the healthiest. You don't want people to just eat canned goods all the time.
Exactly. And, you know, we've been fortunate to partner with the California Center for Rural Policy to do a needs assessment through our programs, primarily our 17 pantry sites, kind of every 3 years for over a decade now. And it's a partnership with St. Joe's as well. And, you know, the people that we serve have higher rates of diabetes and other, you know, underlying health conditions. So it's very, very important that we're able to offer them some healthy food. And when we ask the people we serve, it's like, you know, what prevents you from purchasing healthier foods? And they said, cost. So it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah. Right, right.
And you are the executive director of Food for People. You just mentioned that Food for People has 17 pantry sites around the county.
Mm-hmm.
Can you name them all?
Well, I can tell you they stretch from Oric in the north down to Garberville in the south, and from Eureka all the way out to Willow Creek and Hoopa.
Okay. I thought I'd try and pop quiz you, but the general geographic footprint, that I'll let you slide with that.
Okay.
So this year has been kind of a lot.
That's the understatement of the year.
Yeah. So obviously, as a result of the COVID pandemic and the subsequent financial insecurity it's led to for a lot of people, there has been, you know, a lot of need for what Food for People does. You know, maybe more than ever before. I know for me personally that reality really became apparent when we Loco came out to check out Food for People's emergency distribution event that you did at the Bayshore Mall. I think you've done a few of these at various locations now. And what I saw in there, you know, it's just hundreds of cars lined up to receive these boxes of food that y'all were handing out. Can you talk about the increased need for something as basic as food that you're seeing in the community right now?
Yeah, I would liken it to the recession of 2008-2009 when we saw a 40% jump in requests for food assistance around the county. And it's been pretty daunting. And, you know, this recession, I think, has been even harder because it's been, you know, with the pandemic, everything has been so unpredictable, and with people not knowing, will I even have a job in the future? Will the business I work for survive? Will they be able to hire me back at the, you know, full-time level that I was used to? And if not, is there going to be any other job available for me? I think the level of fear and uncertainty is certainly magnified this time around for all those reasons. And it really has been daunting to see the number of people who line up for these drive-through distributions and are, you know, willing to wait for 2 hours in their cars to get a box of food. You know, and I have generally been on site at each of those just to help coordinate and get a better sense of who we're serving out there. And it really runs the gamut. I mean, people in older broken down cars, some folks on oxygen, people in tears, really grateful to be able to get some food and saying, you don't know how much this means to me. You know, people in newer cars who are obviously out of work and really worried and just wanting to feed their kids. Right now we're talking with folks out in Hoopa about doing another one out there towards the end of this month, because we've done them, you know, around Eureka just because we had the resources available with, you know, big parking lots and some help from EPD and so forth. But, you know, the need levels are very, very high in the eastern part of the county as well. And we've been working with the tribes over the years pretty closely, and especially during the pandemic. So we're excited about the opportunity to do one out there.
What is that like for, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, the people who work for Food for People to just have, just emotionally, like what to in a time like this, to see this just need, as you say, amplified. How is your team coping with this extra burden?
Wow, it's been really hard, because on top of, you know, fielding the emotional impact and the stress that people are feeling personally, my staff feel that, and, you know, that's compounded by the fact that we've had to completely change all of our food distribution models to keep everybody safe. I mean, we used to really focus on having that really person-to-person connection with people and doing an interview, getting to know them better, seeing if there are other services we could connect them to. And we had to stop that interview process and keep it really basic. We used to have our, you know, most of our pantries were set up with a choice model, so that people could come in and choose the foods that really meet their needs, you know, dietary, cultural, personal needs, and so forth. And we've had to resort back to pre-bagging everything just to minimize contact. Right. And even with the drive-through distributions, that was the one way we could think of to serve a large number of people and keep everybody safe. You know, drive up, keep your mask on, pop your trunk, and we'll put the food in your trunk and you can drive away. So it's, you know, we all are really feeling the loss of that personal connection with the people we serve. And I think, you know, my own staff, everybody's concerned about getting sick and exposing their families. So, you know, we've instituted really strict protocols, and knock on wood, I'm really pleased to say that none of our staff has tested positive.
Wow.
You know, when they've had exposure, you know, we make sure they're able to quarantine and then get tested. So, because I, you know, one of the things that happened recently when one of the staff at St. Vinny's got tested positive and they had to shut down operations for 2 weeks, it was absolutely wonderful that the rescue mission and Betty Chin were able to step in and say, we've got you covered, we'll provide the meals. You know, nobody's going to go without, you know, while your staff is taking care of themselves. We don't have that luxury. There isn't really another organization that can come in and run the forklifts and drive the trucks and deliver and understand our inventory systems and all that. So, you know, we're very invested in keeping everybody healthy so we can stay up and running.
Yeah, wow. I thought about that. You know, and earlier you said, this year has been a lot was the understatement of the year. I feel like for Food for People, that couldn't be more true, because, you know, on top, basically just a little bit before the COVID pandemic, I think, if I have my timing right, was when your organization, you know, had Main Food Bank in Eureka, had this serious sewage problem that damaged the building. To a point where the decision was made to just tear it down and rebuild. And so all of these other changes have been happening at a time where Food for People has been going through a serious transition as well. So I thought maybe you could just kind of walk us through that whole saga a little bit and just give us an idea of how intense this year has been for your team.
Yeah, there's a bit of PTSD. Actually, we're coming up on the anniversary, February 28th.
Okay, we thought it was.
Happy anniversary, Anne.
Yeah. I don't know if Hallmark makes a card for that one.
Yeah.
Well, we've had some fun kind of riffing on it.
give us your best food for people sewage jokes.
Well, it's kind of the anniversary of the great poop storm of 2020.
Okay, yes, and, yes.
when the poop hit the fan and all that.
Yeah.
Or floated away.
Thank you for realizing that this is a family show, and I'm sure
you
cleaned that up
you
a little.
You don't say oh, yes. poop.
Yeah. No, I know your mouth, Ann.
You know, that happened, and it was just unbelievable. None of us had ever been through anything like that. When I arrived on the scene, the water was almost a foot deep throughout most of the building. There's a great video image of a trash can floating by on the water. It was just pretty horrific. And then having to have biohazard mitigation teams in to try to figure out how to get the water out of there and clean everything. It was an enormous loss of food. Because we really couldn't take a chance. It had splattered all over the place initially when it was gushing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know a lot of folks said, well, some of the stuff that was higher up, you could just clean it off. And I'm like, who's going to clean it off? And is anybody going to feel comfortable actually using this food? And the answer was no. So
here's your poop drenched can of food. Like,
no, that wasn't going to work. So. Yeah. We had to rally pretty quickly because the biggest loss is the on-site pantry at the facility is our largest in the network and typically serves over 1,200 households a month. Mm. And so we had to find another location, and it was great that the city stepped up and offered us the old Chamber of Commerce building on Broadway, because, you know, whenever you're setting up a pantry like that, there's in a new area, there's apt to be concerns about, well, I don't know if I really want that in my neighborhood. Mm. So the location of that building really did work well has worked well for us. And we got in there and we initially set things up so that people could be socially distanced. And then within a few days, the shelter in place orders happened. So we had to shift everything to outside service.
Yeah. And you'll have to remind me, when we were covering this, when it was first happening, at one point I interviewed you and we talked about the, on top of the, you know, the loss, that there being some concerns about, you know, whether or not insurance was going to cover it and like how that all was going to play out. And I am not sure if I remember what the update was on that or if we ever found out if that happened.
Well, unfortunately, our insurance only covered $30,000 in damages. We had thought we were better covered. It's a company we'd worked with for years with lots of endorsements for business mitigation loss and so forth, and they denied all that. We are still, you know, we had to really ramp up fundraising efforts. I mean, we had a longer range plan to renovate the building because it's old and not as functional as it needed to be. Mm-hmm. But this certainly ramped up the plans. And once we looked at the condition of the building, they had to rip out all the walls at least 12 to 24 inches up because of the water wicking up. And there was already so much mold damage and some structural damage that it made absolutely no sense to pour any money into any short-term fixes there. The back part of the building was not as heavily damaged, so we were able to keep the back warehouse functional and do some operations out of there while we looked for additional space, which is not easy to find in Eureka. You know, warehouse space, and especially warehouse space with access to three-phase power to run refrigeration.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So it took until actually in March, March, April, we were able to find some additional space and then some space next to that original space on West Cedar Street. So that's been really helpful. We did already have additional warehouse space on 2nd Street because we were already bursting at the seams. So we were fortunate that we at least had that space to operate out of. So it's been a really big push to do the fundraising and put the pieces together. It's the projects, the goal is $5 million and we're a little over $3 million right now.
Wow. Where does most of that money come from?
Most of the initial funds have been foundation funding. The Smullen Foundation came up with a lead gift of $1.5 million, which was incredibly important. And St. Joe's and Humboldt Area Foundation and the Rose Perrinen Foundation, a number of others have stepped up, as have some individual donors.
Yeah.
So we're really, really grateful, but we're still pushing because we don't want to end up with a lot of debt once we get into the building. And we're hoping to start construction sometime in March.
Okay. And then what's the timeline for when you'll have a shiny new distribution or a pantry?
Well, it's always hard to predict with construction, but we're hoping by this fall, kind of late fall, probably.
Okay.
Okay.
One big wrench in the works has been that the cost of steel has just skyrocketed. These days I don't say, oh God, what could happen next?
Steel prices are really screwing up food for people operation. Okay. Well, we'll get rid of those tariffs to help you out. And So what does food for people need right now? Because it occurs to me that there have to be people in Humboldt who are going a little stir crazy right now, who maybe would like to direct their energy somewhere positive. Are there volunteering opportunities y'all have? Is donating money and food the best thing that people can do right now?
Yeah, I mean, we typically, before the pandemic, had at least 400 volunteers a month supporting our programs. And on an annual basis, they worked the equivalent of 13, 14 full-time staff positions. So we couldn't do it without them, but we've had to really scale back on volunteer support just to keep everyone safe too. So I know a lot of our volunteers were retirees who had their own health conditions, and we've had to ask them to step back until it's safe to return. The good news is we've had some great new volunteers who have stepped up. It's always a great way to help. And, there's a spot on our website where folks can go and explore volunteer opportunities and sign up, and we'll give you a call if we can use your help.
So so it's right to say food for people needs young volunteers.
Well, that's helpful. Healthy volunteers.
We ask them
all the same questions we would our staff about, have you traveled outside the county and that sort of thing. Because we need to make sure that, we're not exposing anybody unnecessarily.
And what do those volunteering opportunities look like? Like if someone was to come to Food for People and say, okay, use me, how would you use them?
Well, since we're having to pre-bag a lot of the food these days, instead of having people choose it off a shelf, it's pre-bagging. Usually Mondays are our top day, Mondays and Thursdays for doing that. When we have produce come in, it's sorting that into crates and bins. And for some programs, it's bagging up produce that's going to go out through our mobile produce pantry or some of our other programs. That's been most of it right now. We used to have more volunteers involved in direct service, but again, trying to be thoughtful of keeping people safe. But I would say that, I'm speaking mostly for our central operations in Eureka, and folks can go in on our website, foodforpeople.org, and get a list of our pantry sites. And if there's something closer to home, they can certainly contact folks there and see if there's some way that they can help.
Right. Yeah. 17 choice pantries ranging from Oreck to somewhere, and I don't remember everything that you said.
Oreck to Garberville and then east to Willow Creek and Hoopastev.
Thank you, gosh. This guy, he's had a memory like a steel trap. I remember talking about and seeing that at times Food for People has also done, you know, some delivery services. I don't know if those were specifically mm-hmm. senior programs too, but could you talk a little bit about that? Is that still happening? And is that something that volunteers are needed for to drive deliveries?
Yeah, our senior and homebound programs have, even pre-pandemic, provided home delivery services for folks who have underlying health conditions that can't get out or don't have access to transportation. So, you know, a few hundred of our folks are getting regular monthly deliveries. And for the most part, our volunteer delivery drivers had been doing it for years and built relationships with people to the extent that not only would they deliver the food, they would carry it inside, help people put it away. We have one great video of Mike Vitello, who's been volunteering for years and, you know, taking the food to one of our seniors who is blind and explaining to her what it was and what she had and talking about different ways she could prepare it. And, you know, those kinds of things are so great. But, you know, we haven't, unfortunately, with the pandemic, we've had to say, you can leave the food on their doorstep, but you really can't go in their homes. Wow. So that is a really big loss, and we're looking forward to being able to resume that again when it's safe to do so. You know, there definitely is a need for some assistance with volunteer deliveries, because we do have folks who, again, you know, they have a conflict, they can't do their regular monthly deliveries, or, you know, they've been ill themselves and are thoughtful and not wanting to expose anyone. So
right. Mm-hmm. And have you seen an uptick in the need for that program with now, you know, also older people, you know, being told to stay inside more, like to not even go to the grocery store themselves if they can avoid it? Or
yeah, there has been an uptick, and especially the first few months. And that was an interesting time, because a lot of them said, you know, my income is fine. I just can't get out and shop for myself. And fortunately, because we partner closely with so many other local organizations, the Area One Agency on Aging said, we have some funding that we can do that for people. So if they're not income eligible for your services, refer them to us and we'll help.
Right.
So it's always nice to be able to say, you know, we can't, but here's who can.
I've always found that really nice how our local nonprofits often find ways to, you know, overlap work and work together and figure out what they're good at and how they can help other people accomplish unique goals and meet unique needs in the community.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the PSPS events help set the stage for that to some degree.
Yeah, a little test.
When the power went down, I thought, oh my gosh, I don't have the cell phone numbers of all these people I really need to connect with. I, you know, I'm relying on the regular office phone or the internet, you know, neither of which were available. So it was a real, a lot of activity for all of us around collecting those essential cell phone numbers, that which have certainly been very helpful during the pandemic as well.
I forgot. There's been so much crazy stuff since. I sometimes forget about the PSPS events. Yeah. And now when you say that, I'm just thinking, wow, the amount of things, the amount of emergencies that you've had to step up and deal with in the last, you know, year and a half is just kind of insane. It's like you've been put to the test here, I think.
Well, right. And one of the other ones that I never would have anticipated through the pandemic is that, you know, the government started throwing a lot of money for programs out there. But a lot of it came with very few guidelines and short turnaround times. And it's been really appreciated, certainly, getting some extra food into the pipeline. But, you know, some of the programs haven't always made as much sense as they could. You know, starting with the positive, I would say that one of the great things that happened is we were really overwhelmed the first few months of the pandemic until the emergency allocations for additional CalFresh benefits came through, and the stimulus checks and pandemic EBT for families who have children who would receive preschool meals kicked in. And the irony is these are all things that we've been advocating for years that made much more sense. Like with our children's summer lunch program, it's really tough to serve kids in a rural area and under the rules that they had established, because they all have to come to a site, they have to eat the food on site, they can only take an apple, it's called the walking apple, away from the site, or you won't get reimbursed for the meal. And that makes no sense for rural areas where it could be really costly for families to drive their kids to the center of town to a distribution site. So we opted to spend more than half of that on food-only grocery gift store cards, grocery store gift cards. And so we were able to get those out through all of our programs and through a number of our partner organizations. And, you know, it was great. It, you know, the other challenge was they had to be food-only or we wouldn't get reimbursed for them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of stores aren't set up to do that. They have what they call family-friendly cards where you can't use them to buy tobacco products, alcohol, or lottery tickets. But you can buy toilet paper, which I have no problem with people buying the other things they need, but the government apparently did. So it's a big undertaking for a store to change their point of sale system. And, you know, the vendors that we ended up working for it had to print special gift certificates for this purpose. And it was like having another full-time job for me and my bookkeeper, but
It occurs to me how often you have to make very weighty decisions that potentially, you know, are going to impact, you know, so many lives in this county. I really respect you stepping up to the plate as much as you do to make sure this all runs smoothly, as smooth as possible.
Well, it's part of my stubborn nature. I couldn't stand to leave that money on the table. And we were fortunate that Redwood Empire Food Bank in Santa Rosa that we work through under Feeding America was able to, kind of purchase the rest of those dollars in food for us and store it for a bit of time until we were able to take it. So,
I wonder, like, you know, as with everything that's going on, my perception has been that the community has stepped up in ways to support Food for People. I know, you know, we do, and Las Cruces Communications does an annual food drive with y'all, and I think I remember seeing that you brought in a record haul this year, so that's good. Are there other signs of hope that you have seen that you look to that are helping you get through this?
Yeah, I would have to say I am so tremendously grateful to our community, because, you know, everyone has really stepped up and offered help. We've received donations from people who have never ever donated before. You know, I open all the mail, so I get to read the notes that come in with those. You know, people saying, you know, this is my stimulus check, you need it a lot more than we do.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, that it's been so gratifying. And I know the Senator McGuire food drive that we did in conjunction with Lost Coast Communications, and have, this was our fifth year. We went into that thinking, oh my God, what, how is this going to work? Because it's, you know, been a competition among six local high schools to see who can bring in the most food. And we're in a space right now where we have limited storage capacity for additional food because we're spread out over four locations. And also we're trying to be safe and quarantine the food for a period of time before volunteers handle it. And, you know, we talked with the Senator McGuire and the leadership students and their advisors at each of the schools and said, you know, how about if we set up our website so that people can contribute and you can track it by class, because they wanted to have a little competition, you know, at each school site. Although the kids this year said, we don't want to compete against each other as schools. This is the time to unite, to support our community, which was just, it just brought me to tears when they said that. That was, it was their idea. And
the youth will save us.
Yes. Thank God. So, I would say our community has been super generous. And I think, you know, one of the drivers behind that may be that this is not a Humboldt isolated experience. Yeah. That if you watch the news every night, you see the long lines of cars and the larger metropolitan areas. And then folks see, yeah, that's happening here in Humboldt too. So it's more of a nationwide shared experience and deeper, which creates a deeper understanding of the level of need, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said before, you know, people suddenly needing services like this themselves sometimes when they didn't. I think that a lot of people are truly realizing now, you know, how much they could be, you know, one paycheck away from being in need of these services themselves. You know, that people are realizing that there's not that much separation between us. So
exactly.
It's been amazing. It's been very heartening to see people stepping up like that, for sure.
Well, and we're, believe it or not, we've been talking for almost an hour. That's about the time that we allot for these things. So I want to thank you for your willingness to speak to us, and hopefully, you know, people will get a better idea of all things Food for People as a result of listening to this. I have one more dumb question, and then we can close. And what is your favorite food?
Oh my goodness. I don't know that I have one favorite food. I love Thai and Indian food.
Okay.
A lot. But I like to experiment, and I have a garden myself and have really enjoyed that. That's been my area of solace through the pandemic, is to, when things are stressful, to go out and play in my garden.
What is the pride corner of your garden? What do you have out there that you're like, I'm killing it at this?
Blueberries.
Okay.
Yeah. I got some of the best blueberries going.
Okay.
Love blueberries. Right. They do well there too.
Yeah. I want an Ann Holcomb blueberry pie at some point.
You're on, Andrew.
Okay.
Well, blueberry pie and distribution.
Yeah. Thank you so much for Zooming with us in this weird forum. But anything else you want to say in closing? Any message you want to get out to Humboldt?
Well, this went by really quickly. just thank you to the community. You know, I'm still considered probably a newcomer after being here for 20 years.
Oh.
But it's, you know, times like these really show everybody's mettle and where their hearts are. And I couldn't be happier than to be in a community like this. I've got 6 grandkids growing up here, and that's pretty much what it's all about for me, is making sure that they understand the importance of growing up in a community that cares. So.
Well, that's really sweet.
All right.
Thank you so much again. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much again to Ann Holcomb for chatting with us, for Zooming it up with us today, and giving us a little bit of insight into the poop storm that Food for People has had to endure over the last year or so. But it's incredible work that they've been doing.
And again, as Anne said, there are lots of opportunities for you to volunteer with Food for People. And I'll just say, lots of local nonprofits are probably hurting right now and could use some fresh energy to make this county be the best that it can be. So if you're sitting there with time on your hands and energy in your gut, is that where you keep your energy? Anyway, if you got that,
absolutely.
If you got that gut energy, then get out there, and this is the time. This is the time to put up.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah. Anyway, Another week in the books. Stay safe. Stephanie, thank you for, I don't know, something.
You're welcome.
We'll see you next week. Wear a mask. Be good. Yeah, be good. All right. Bye.